Hour number three, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Rich is off for the long weekend. Steve D'Ossi is in the house on a Patriots Friday. We've already spoken to Daron Harmon. We will not get to speak to the playmaker Michael Irvin today because his voice is shot. Wasn't his voice shot a week or so ago? And
it sounded
horrible when he was on with us.
Oh, yeah.
Felt bad. So I'd rather he not come on than come on and sound horrible. By the way, I did just check. The last time Maryland and Clemson played, it was before Durkin was there. It was 2013.
Right.
So he's not even looking for information on that. So even less of a reason that I can come up with. I was trying to come up with some reason Saban put him on the staff. But anyway, it's beside the point. During the break, I looked it up to see.
Yeah.
2013 was the last time they played. Patriots and Steelers Sunday. Now, I see who wrote it. Oh, this is an AP story. A guy named Josh Dubow, writing for the Associated Press. And what he's trying to do is kind of come up with the best coaches. What they've done is they had a panel of 10 football writers for the Associated Press. And these 10 football writers picked the best coaches in the NFL. I shouldn't say it that way. The coaches who have done the best job.
This year
in the NFL.
Right.
The coaches who have done the best job. Not the best coaches necessarily. And some of this might surprise you a little bit. It surprised me. Because they're top of the rankings. They've got Matt Nagy of the Bears.
Huh.
They say he's done the best job. Now he's got Mitch Trubisky as opposed to Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff at quarterback, so maybe that's got something to do with it. They've got Pete Carroll second. Pete Carroll of the Seahawks second.
Interesting.
Andy Reid of the Chiefs is third. Now, his quarterback's got 45 touchdown passes.
And, true.
You know, looks really good. Fourth is Anthony Lynn of the Chargers. You saw him last night. Sixth is Sean McVay of the Rams. If you're waiting to hear his name, you'll see Bill Belichick just behind Frank Reich of the Colts. Reich is eighth. Belichick is ninth on the job that they've done this year. The AP rankings of the job they've done coaching this season. I actually kind of agree with Nagy.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. You know, and you know, if you look at, we're just talking about the job done this year. You know, Frank Reich and Indy, what are they, 7-6? Are they 7-6? They were a 4-12 team. They weren't sure what luck was going to be when he came back. You know, okay. You know, you've already got three more wins than you did last year. Patriots are sitting on, you know, 9-4. I think people expected them more to be in the 3-4 loss range, you know, somewhere around there. That's pretty much what was expected. This isn't a particularly banner year for the Patriots in any way because they've been so good for so long that, you know, 9-4 is like, yeah, all right. Is what it is. Let's move along. Nothing new to see here.
But surprised Pete Carroll's second.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think they're giving a whole lot of credit for the fact that that Legion of Boom's gone.
Right. I mean, the defense has been decimated by departure. But they can clinch a playoff spot with a win this week, despite losing Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, Cam Chancellor, Cliff Averill. Earl Thomas has been out most of the season.
True.
And yet a win this weekend. By the way, and I think that's the best chance for Kansas City to lose another game. At Seattle.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
A week from Sunday.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I mean, that defense plays very well. I mean, overall, they're probably, I think they're number two or three in the in scoring, in terms of scoring defense, but actually the Bears are ahead of them, but again, you're a team that's borderline playoff team. Does that make you the number two best coach? Because you still have.
They're just saying the job that he's done this year,
with
what he's got to play with, the way they're basically retooling the roster.
Okay,
and to have them in playoff contention despite all that means he's done a hell of a job. Now, I think Pete's a little overrated as a coach, to be honest with you.
Agreed.
I think he's such a nice guy. He's so much fun to be around.
People like him.
Everybody likes him.
Doggone it.
Everybody likes him. You know, we were talking about overrated because I think Mike Tomlin's totally overrated as a coach. I think Pete Carroll's on my overrated list.
Agreed.
Good coach.
I'll give their GM more credit than Pete to put that team together, that defense that they had. I mean, that and then... Marshawn Lynch and going after a guy like Russell Wilson, believing in a guy like Russell Wilson. That's some pretty good personnel moves. I don't know how I'm sure Pete Carroll has some input into the personnel, but those teams that won a Super Bowl and were competing in Super Bowls were very well put together.
One of the voters, the New York-based voter, talking about Belichick, said, despite the Miami miracle, he has the Patriots on the verge of a 10th consecutive division title. Aside from quarterback, of course, this is hardly the most talented roster in Foxborough, yet it would surprise no one if they once again reached the Super Bowl. It would surprise me. I wouldn't be shocked, but I'll be surprised
if they make it. Yeah, I'd be a little surprised. You know, especially if they have to go on the road to win a game. This is not a good road defense, not a good road team at all. If they have, you know, I don't care if they're playing in front of 28,000 in Los Angeles. They still got to go on the road, and it hasn't been good to them this year at all. So
we had a caller the other day, and I wish I could remember who he was. We actually replayed him yesterday on Best Of. He said Belichick's senile, and it's time to get him out of here.
Of course, super.
Yeah.
Great take.
What he wanted to do was hand the team over to Josh McDaniels, let him, you know, be the guy, and get Belichick the hell out of there. Now, if you want to criticize Belichick, the general manager, which he more or less is,
okay,
I'm willing to listen to that. But Belichick, the coach, despite the mistake that we all acknowledge that they made at the end of the game on Sunday, Belichick, the coach, still right there.
There was a better coach in the history of the game, let alone the current game. It's just the way it is, and as far as the GM thing goes, he hasn't put together all world rosters. He's put together rosters that work for him.
Yeah, and obviously you can't predict that Isaiah Wynn's going to get hurt,
right?
And going to miss the season with an Achilles.
So Michelle gets banged up before the season starts, and of course. But again, here's a coach who's made his bones by taking guys that. Quite often, the guys really didn't think were worthy of playing. Guys like Vrabel and Ninkovich, and they thought Rodney Harrison was done. Nobody wanted Troy Brown before that was earlier on. But there's a ton of guys.
Troy Brown got cut here by Parcells like three times.
His GM moves. When you look at it, he hasn't produced. He's produced one Hall of Famer. And I don't even think that was his move. Was Brady his move?
No, Dick Rabine is the one who really talked Belichick into drafting him in the sixth round.
Well, he drafted him.
But they will tell you within the organization, Scott Pioli's told this story, Dick Rabine, who's no longer with us, who was the quarterback coach then, he's the one who really went to bat for Brady.
Right.
He's the one who said, no, this is the guy you've got to take. And as Pioli's always joked, if we thought he was going to be Tom Brady, do you think we would have let him sit there till the sixth round?
Right, exactly right.
They had no idea.
Well, that's the thing. You're sitting there, and we can talk about his GM moves. The reason, you think of the Hall of Famers that have played with Tom Brady. Not a lot. Randy Moss? Who else?
I think Gronk's borderline.
Gronk's Hall of Fame talent, all-world talent, one of the most talented tight ends I've ever seen. But you're still going to have to put together more numbers. You're going to have a couple more good years to solidify that selection. It's just the way it is. Agreed. Absolute Hall of Fame talent. One of the best tight ends I've ever seen. Randy Moss, one of the best receivers ever to play.
And that might be the entire list.
Corey Dillon, because he has a ton of yards.
Not for me, but maybe the stats accumulation would get him there.
I thought
but
he was up over 14,000 yards or something like that. I
haven't looked
sure.
at it lately, obviously. Yeah. I haven't even thought about Corey Dillon.
But
in a
who
while.
Else? Ty Law? Ty Law could make a case.
He's borderline.
You can make a case for Ty Law.
Every year the case gets made because he becomes one of the finalists. Maybe one of these years he's going to push over the top.
Right. And I think he's deserving. I think just, again, I rely more on the eye test than anything else, and he's also got numbers he can put up against it too. So
not a single offensive lineman.
Nope.
I mean, Matt Leit's the best of the bunch, a Patriots
Logan
Hall of
Mankins.
Famer, and deserves to be, not a Hall of Famer.
No. Seymour, McGinnis, Patriots Hall of Famers, Teddy Bruschi, Patriots Hall of Famer. But the idea that you've surrounded yourself with guys that that have come together to accomplish these incredible things without being that heralded coming into the situation. You know, you're not talking about an overwhelming abundance of killer first round picks that just come in and take your team to another level. It's just not the way it is. As a matter of fact, you could go up and down as first round picks, and for the most part, somewhat unremarkable.
And part of that problem in quotation marks here, part of that problem is you're always picking at the end of the first round. You know, you're not getting first, second, third overall picks. You're not in the ballpark to draft a Saquon Barkley or
right.
or you know somebody like that. It's not going to be a possibility for you.
Yeah, it's absolutely true, and that's why they've had no problem trading out of the first round as much time as they have. They look at it, if you're looking at the 28th, 29th pick, and you're saying, okay, well, we've got 10 guys that could fit in there. That means you're talking about five or six picks into the second round. So if you can grab an extra third or fourth round pick by dumping that first round pick that was only a 28 or 29 or 30, whatever, 31, that's fine. He's done it nonstop, but again, back to the original premise of this: the coaching, the best coaches thus far this year.
By the way, Mike Tomlin's not on the list.
No, no problem with Nagy.
And the list only goes through 10.
Yeah, no problem with Nagy. But I think Belichick being as low as he is was probably because the expectations are always incredibly high for the Patriots, and right now they're just on the outside looking in at those expectations.
And the other part of that is he always suffers by comparison to his own legacy. How many times has he been coach of the year? Once?
Isn't that, no. It cannot be right. That cannot be correct. You are incorrect, sir. I don't even know, and I'm not even going to Googleize it.
I'm going to give that a big now.
There's no way he's only been coach of the year once. It makes no sense whatsoever. He was coach of the decade for the 2000s, correct?
Three times.
Three, okay.
All right, see, I was going to say. Only three? That's ridiculous, too. Are you kidding me? Three times.
The last one was 2010.
Yeah, he hasn't been coach of the year since 2010. He was 2010, 2007, when they went 16-0.
Right.
Would have been kind of hard to deny
it. Yeah, true.
And 2003.
Okay.
Those were the three times he's been coach of the year. They were 14-2 in 2003. They were 16-0 in 2007. They were 14-2 in 2010.
Who was coach of the year when they beat Atlanta in the Super Bowl? Who was coach of the year?
Ron Rivera.
I've known Ron for a long time. Ron,
he's been coach of the year twice.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he took him to the Super Bowl once.
Bruce Arians has been twice.
Ron Rivera got it in the year that the Patriots beat Atlanta. If I'm Ron, after that game, after that Super Bowl, I walk to Belichick's front door, put it on the stoop, ring the bell, and run. Run. This is yours. I'm not worthy. I don't deserve this.
Steve, actually, it's worse. That was the year against the Seahawks. I made a mistake. It was Jason Garrett was the coach of the year.
What?
The year they beat the Falcons.
Excuse me?
Cowboys went 13-3 that year.
You're kidding me. 13-3, and how'd they do in the playoffs?
Not that good.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me. Why don't you wait? Why can't you just wait till the season's
over? Well,
Coach
of the Year awards are always regular season. I always wonder about that, and I guess it's a timing thing. Because, for instance, Alex Cora wasn't Manager of the Year this year in the American League.
Again, dumb.
But if you had done the balloting at the end of the World Series, he would have been
a
landslide winner.
True. Why the rush? Why the rush?
I don't know the answer to that.
To get it out during the season while things are... It's like, okay, playing the Pro Bowl right the week before the Super Bowl is better than playing it after the Super Bowl. It's like when people are still thinking about it. You think where they think after the World Series that people won't recognize a World Series and Coach of the Year award. I mean, come on. A ton of awards are given out after the...
You got to look at the Coach of the Year. This is when you question it. Go back to 2009.
Yep.
Marvin Lewis.
They were, what, 12-4?
They were 10-6.
Ten and six, and he's Coach of the Year.
Stop it. Come on.
This is maybe the best awards. They're just looking through like who won Coach of the Year. Right. Mike Smith with the Falcons the year before that, an 11-5 record.
Again, I don't trust any of those awards. It's the same thing with some of the Pro Bowls and whatnot. The All-Pro, the ones that are voted on, All-Pro is usually pretty good. I mean, there's...
But Pro Bowl...
Pro Bowl's nothing.
80 guys are on the Pro Bowl team.
Right. I mean, it would have been nice to go at once, but it's not... Nowadays, it's you've got to, and this year there'll be more guys than ever backing out because it's in Orlando this year.
I think you're right.
The Pro Bowl.
They don't go to Hawaii anymore.
No. There'll be a ton of guys backing out of that one. They'll be like, "Meh, I'm good."
There will be, you know, 13 Pro Bowl quarterbacks in the AFC.
Right. That's right.
We'll all be able to say Pro Bowl quarterback.
Yeah, I get this shoulder thing.
Oh,
hey, you know,
man, I don't think I can
hammy,
make it.
Get the hammy thing. I can't really make it, you know. It's unbelievable. But, again, back again to Pete Carroll. Okay, that's a nice little story. You're vying for the playoffs, but you still have your quarterback that everybody says is great. I think he's a pretty damn good quarterback, too. You've got a couple of players left over on defense, and you've got a young, fast defense, and you've got one of the better home field advantages in football. And he's done good. I don't think a lot was expected of them. I think they're one of those teams that I think people had them in the mix. I don't think people were counting Seattle out, especially when you're talking about some of the teams that you're talking about. I don't think everybody was counting them out.
Patriots Friday with Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
I would take the steal if he doesn't play. Jalen Samuels is the guy they're going to use. He's more of a receiver than runner. I think they're going to throw all over the Patriots. I don't trust the Patriots defense at all. I've seen now in back-to-back weeks them get carved up on the ground. I've also seen them struggle in the passing game in the middle of the field. I saw Jermaine Kearse tear them up early this year against the
tight ends are worried.
That's an issue, and they got a couple of versatile tight ends there in Pittsburgh. Big plays are an issue for this Patriot defense. They're bottom 10 in giving up 20 and 40-yard plays. The Steelers are in the top 10 with those big plays. And I just, when it comes down to it, I don't trust this Patriot defense against a high-octane offense to make the plays late. And I think this thing is a shootout. It's in the 30s, maybe the 40s. So Mutt on the M&M Investments podcast is high on the Steelers. How about Merlone? I mean, that's the Mutt pick. How about Merlone? What's
interesting.
Because I'm just, you know, Mutt is very strong, apparently.
M&M might have a little disagreement on that.
I do, and I tell
you went 4-0, so you get honors here.
I'm going to New England here, given two. Last week we took Miami 7.5 because I felt like they would win, just not cover that game. And we all know how that thing ended, which would have happened anyway, right? They would have covered it and just not, it would have won the game. Miami would have covered, rather. I go back on the history again. See, the one thing that game was so crazy, that last play against Miami. And I know defensively they look like crap, right? They ran the ball. And yeah,
someone named Brandon Bolden, who I think there was a play.
And we get the gist there, guys.
Yeah, oh yeah, pretty much. Yep.
It's got to fill 20 minutes.
Mutt likes Pittsburgh.
Mutt loves Pittsburgh.
Interesting.
Thinks they're going to throw the ball all over the Patriots. Not an invalid opinion, by the way.
No, simply because
great wide receivers.
And this defense plays poorly on the road. That's an absolute factor, and to ignore that would make sense. But Pittsburgh has been finding ways to shoot themselves in the foot any number of times over the last 3 weeks. It's been amazing the way they've just given games away.
So I guess the question is, I mean, that's the wise guys here in Boston. How about in Pittsburgh? Because they've got, you know, all sports stations in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Aren't you kind of curious to see how they're looking at this game?
I am.
Steelers are getting 2.5. Okay. Who wants to lead us off?
2.5. Patriots. I agree.
I'm on the Patriots as well. I don't know if it's... I don't think it's going to be a big win as far as points go, but I do think the Patriots win by at least a field goal.
After talking to Ben Volin, though.
Yeah.
Volin? From the Boston Globe. Is he...
Volin? Ben Volin?
Volin? Volin.
After talking to Ben Volin, though. After talking to Ben Volin, though.
Yeah.
From the Boston Globe.
Is he going to swing?
All he did was, like, beat down the Patriots and tell us how they're not going to win this game. I think it's going to be... I think the Patriots... I think it's going to be a one-point game either way.
Okay.
So then that way I take the Steelers.
That sounds like... Sounds like a lot of us on the air reacting to the last game we saw.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, here we had an awful game to react to. They had a loss to the Oakland Raiders.
Right.
After talking to Ben Volin, though.
And two losses before that that were fairly ugly, too. The comeback by the Chargers, and who did they lose to before that?
Well, I've been hearing that, you know, that they get, there's been some turning on the Steelers out in Pittsburgh right now. You know, three straight losses, possibility of four straight. Then you're looking at the possibility of not making the playoffs.
Right.
And then, you know, they're going to turn pretty quickly. You've got guys hurt. You know, James Conner, I don't know if he practiced today yet. I haven't checked yet. But, you know, hasn't practiced the last couple of days.
If you don't practice on Monday, and I mean on Wednesday and Thursday, a Friday practice isn't going to...
Walkthrough is not going to get you ready.
Not going to cut it that well, I wouldn't think. But, I mean, I've seen guys do not even practice Wednesday through Friday and still end up playing. But different position running back with a foot injury. And you might get away with it a little bit, offensive line, tape it up or something, maybe even D-line or whatever. But as much as they have to cut and move and all the things that they have to do, yeah, that's tough.
617-779-7937. Joe's down on the Cape. Hey, Joe.
Good morning. Oh, nope, sorry, it's afternoon.
That's all right. How you doing?
I was unfortunately at the game last Sunday down in Miami.
It was 80 degrees. How unfortunate could it be?
It's not a bad day.
Yeah, it was. But, I mean, I think the only thing that made us somewhat happy is there were so many, I think it was as many Patriot fans down there as there were Miami fans that game.
Oh, there always is.
Easily. December games in Miami, the Patriots draw huge.
Yeah. But the question I mean called for was fascinating. Everybody talks about home field advantage. And Steve, I mean, other than the crowd, is there a difference in playing in somebody else's field?
It depends on a number of things. Altitude, temperature, cold, the condition of the field. There's any number of things, but these are all things that you don't worry about when you're a good team. You just do what you got to do and find ways to win the game. But there's a half a dozen just flat-out obvious excuses, and I don't even want to call them excuses. They're factors, but good teams tend to overcome those factors. It's just the way it is.
Last night, a lot of people seem to be slipping on that Kansas City field.
Okay. I believe it. It happens.
But it's also the age-old thing about the both teams got to play on it.
Yep.
The field in Miami was awful on Sunday.
Yeah, it was.
Big chunks of it being torn out in places, but both teams have got to play.
Yeah.
The biggest difference for me, defensively, there should be no excuse, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, there's no noise factor if you're playing defense. Now, offense, I can see. Crowd's loud. They're making it hard to call signals. You're going with silent counts. There's just an extra element to it. Offensively, I understand not performing as well on the road. Defensively, I don't.
And Rivers' arm didn't look that strong last night.
It absolutely did not. I agree with you. It's almost like he was chucking it up for grabs a couple times, but he ended up getting where it had to be for a lot of times. There were a couple times he underthrew people, but it does look like he's heaving the ball. He always was kind of a heaver anyway. He was always a guy that would look like he was working harder to throw the ball than other quarterbacks were, but I agree with you. It looked like he was short on a number of passes, and second off, he looked like he was heaving it and trying to get a little extra air under the ball to let his receivers run under it.
We talked about this earlier, but earlier this season when they were playing in London, Mike Vrabel of Tennessee went for two in the win, didn't get it, and got killed in Tennessee for it. Kick the extra point, go for overtime. Well, Anthony Lynn last night goes for two to win, doesn't kick the extra point. They're successful. He's a genius. That's great. If you're successful, and by the way, the play was so open, I could have caught it.
Right.
But you're a genius when that happens. He gets stopped there. I mean, Rivers throws a bad pass. They actually cover the receiver.
Yep.
Anthony Lynn is getting clobbered today.
Of course. But here's the little bit of a difference there. I don't know. I wouldn't think that Vrabel got clobbered by his players.
The players, no. Yeah. The media, the fans.
Right, right. And if Vrabel learned anything from his time here in New England is you can't worry about the media. You can't worry about angry fans. You can't worry about any of that stuff. You got to worry about your team and what your team is thinking. So when I saw Vrabel lining up to do that, I was like, I get it. You know, he's trying to set the tone, get a new culture going here in Tennessee and be the aggressive guy and take a shot at it. And I don't think he looked at his team and thought playoffs anyway. So he's thinking, you know what? let's get a little something going for these guys and move along like that.
The narrative
last night was a harder decision.
Well, the narrative last night, supposedly after the game, I saw Mike Pouncey being quoted, and he said the offensive line went to their position coach and said, "Look, we're going to go down and score on this drive, and we're going to go for two to win this thing." And supposedly, you know, they were telling the coach this. Now, Anthony Lynn says he told his offensive coordinator as they were going down the field, "If we score, get your two-point play ready because we're going for it. We're going to win."
Wow.
Now, part of that, I think, is a fear of putting the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands again.
Yeah, but by the time they get down there, who cares if he?
I was thinking more of overtime.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know,
yeah.
I don't want to give Mahomes another opportunity.
Yeah, but they've been doing it. In the fourth quarter, they did a decent job against him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can see what you're saying, though. He is, I think he's the right now the premier quarterback in the league. So I could see how that would be a factor.
I told Kim when we got the ball, we score, get your 2-point play ready. We're going for it.
I mean,
the other part of the equation is, let's say you lose that game, you're still where you were before that game. You're still the number 5 seed in the playoffs. So if you lose it, there's not a lot to lose there. You're not losing position. You know, you're still going to maintain.
You got a lot to gain, not much to lose.
Absolutely
is what you're
right. It's like you're getting great odds on a bet. You're making a bet. I don't know what the percentage of 2-point plays that succeed are, but let's call it a 1/3 bet. Okay, well, so, you know, 1/3 of the time, the payoff is phenomenal. The payoff is great.
And the other part of this, and they were saying on the telecast last night, I think, that in that scenario, opportunity to go for 2 and win as opposed to kick the extra point and tie, 9 out of 10 coaches in the NFL have taken the extra point.
I agree.
9 out of 10 are saying,
Agreed.
Kick it. We'll take our chances in overtime. So that does take, and I understand they didn't have much to lose. They had a lot to gain.
Yep.
But there's still an element of, you know, some courage there on his part.
I absolutely agree. You still got to be strong and have the resolve to make that call. But I do think that there's a slow trend going on about these 2-point plays and about going for it in certain times and whatnot. It just seems like some of these younger, aggressive coaches are trying to rewrite that thing. I don't know if there's been more 2-point plays gone for this year or more fourth downs gone for this year, but it just
feels
seems it, like
though,
it.
It
does. It
yeah,
really does.
I agree with
and,
you.
And I think that's part of being that new, aggressive, you know, maybe numbers-driven coach in the NFL. And just because something doesn't make sense on the surface doesn't mean that you can't make something happen. I don't know. I like it. I was when I saw him going out for 2, I was like, "This is crazy. I love it." If that was my coach, I'm like, "Yes, I love you. That's great."
Nonstop wall to wall coverage of the Patriots. We're back with Dale and Keith on WEEI.
Adam Schefter of ESPN is a regular weekly guest on with Mutton Callahan. He was on earlier today. And the subject of Josh McDaniels came up. You'll remember last year. He accepted the head coaching job with the Indianapolis Colts. In fact, went so far as to begin hiring a staff. And then backed out at the last minute. Mm-hmm. The Patriots sweetened the pie here. He changed his mind. He stayed. The Colts, to their credit, allowed the guys who had already made arrangements to go to Indianapolis to still have their contracts.
Right.
They did the right thing. Josh did the exact wrong thing in terms of allowing other families to, you know, get disrupted and
right,
change your lives and all that stuff. But anyway, then at that point, people were saying, that's it, he's done. He'll never get another coaching job in the NFL.
I wonder what part ownership in Indianapolis played in that decision, too. I wonder, there's all sorts of, I mean, he's been as wacky as...
I was going to say, you want to work for that guy?
Yeah, he's been
but
as wacky as
But then you shouldn't have taken
owner.
The job.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. But you're right. The immediately...
Hey, Quentin, what's up, man? Yeah.
That guy.
Immediately, the national media was like, oh, he's done. He'll never get another job. You're 100% correct. That's exactly what you were hearing across the country
sure.
about that.
Heck, I probably said it myself. And
hey, you fired up.
I'll tell you, I didn't. I said, trust me, the teams are desperate to grab any bit of championship caliber coaching that they can, he will have absolute opportunities. I didn't think it would be immediately. I didn't think it would be this quick, but I would bet that he's going to get some offers this year.
So the question that they posed to Adam Schefter this morning is, will Josh McDaniels be a head coaching candidate in this offseason?
Well, if he wants one, he will get one. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind about that, because we get, on average, 7 head coaching changes per year. We've already gotten 2. We'll get minimum 4 or 5 more. I mean, there just will be. So there'll be 6, 7, 8 openings. Now, you tell me who the 6, 7, 8 assistant coaches are that people are targeting. And last year, when everybody hired all these coaches, the majority of them were offensive-minded coaches. And the year before, they were offensive-minded coaches. And they're always offensive-minded coaches. And so if they're always offensive-minded coaches, who would be the top guy in that area? Josh McDaniels.
Now, Rich, who normally sits at that chair right over there, is not a Josh McDaniels fan.
Right.
He thinks this is all Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, pulling the trigger.
Okay.
To Adam's point, though, I guess the exception here would be Matt Patricia, but most of the coordinators who moved on to head coaching jobs were the offensive side of the ball.
Sure.
Sean McVay, and well, Josh was given the chance to work with Andrew Luck and turned it down. So there is no doubt in Schefter's mind, if he wants a head coaching job, and we don't know that, but if he wants one, he'll get one. In fact, Schefter continued.
That's why it was almost laughable last year when he decided to say no to Indianapolis. That people, oh, he'll never get a head coaching job ever again. Well, 1 year, he's got to wait till he's a candidate again. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to take one either. We've seen how picky and selective he could be, and he should be, because he's going to be a candidate every year there, as long as Bill and Tom are there and he's thriving in the system and he's demonstrating the work that he does. So unless he's entirely comfortable with that situation, he's not going to jump, unlike other coordinators and coaches who, when they first get an opening, they can't wait to get a head coaching job. Josh has proven he's going to be very patient with this and very picky, to the point where some people think it's a detriment, when it's not. It's just not.
Hey, because speaking of...
There aren't enough quality coordinators that other teams are coveting as their head coach.
And you know what I think the best option for him will be? And I think he'll be offered the job? Cleveland.
Yeah, I could see that.
You've got the good young quarterback there.
Yeah, and
you've got a general manager who seems to know his ass from his elbow as opposed to, you know, past people.
Yep. And that's...
Now, you got an ownership that's a little shaky.
True, but you talk about Green Bay. I would absolutely prefer the Cleveland job over Green Bay. Not even a question.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is closer to the end of his career than the beginning of his career.
Right.
I'm not suggesting the cliff is approaching like Max Kellerman said about Brady, but, you know, he's an older quarterback.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And
with, by the way, expectations of, if you go in there and replace Mike McCarthy, you better win.
Of course.
Now, in Cleveland, you get to 500, they'll practically build a statue of you.
Well, that's what Bill Belichick did. He slowly built the team that was that got to the playoffs, and then the bottom fell out when they announced that they were moving to Baltimore. So there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to have opportunities. When he came back and re-signed or redid his deal with the Patriots, I thought for sure that that was going to be a minimum of 2, maybe even 3 years.
I bet the Patriots thought so, too.
Yeah.
I bet Robert Kraft thought, look, we're making a commitment to you.
And I'll bet you it stays that way. If there's going to be...
You think he won't go?
I don't think he'll go. I think he'll look at this and gear it up for one last hurrah and see what him and Belichick and Brady can do. And if it doesn't work out next year, then so be it. But if there's 6 or 7 jobs opening up this year, there'll be 4 or 5 opening up next year. It's just the way it is.
Obviously, with the Rooney Rule restrictions, you are not allowed to tell Josh McDaniels, listen, when Bill's gone, you're the guy. Now, you can say stuff behind the scenes. You can't announce that publicly. You can't say, oh, well, he's the next head coach of the Patriots. And I'm not sure when Bill's leaving. I don't think this is any time in the next couple of years.
Why would you? You know,
he likes it. He's good at it.
He likes it. He's the best at it. And there's other challenges that could come up in the next 2, 3, 4 years. You talk about a man that loves a challenge. That guy loves a challenge. No two ways about it. You tell him he can't do something, he'll want to find a way to get it done. The next challenge he's going to face is do I want to do this without Brady?
See, I've never bought, and I've heard that one before, that was why he wanted Brady out. He wanted to keep Jimmy G because he wanted to prove he could win with somebody else. I don't think he gives a damn.
Not
as long as he wins, he doesn't care.
Not so much proving that he can win, but challenging himself to say, okay, well, how do I do this now? Bill Belichick is not competing against anybody in terms of coach of the year, coach of the decade, coach of all time. It's already an established fact. There is not competition there. The only person he's competing against is himself. I wouldn't be surprised if he sat there and said, you know what? This is as good a challenge as I've had in 15, 16 years. I'm challenged to rebuild this team and not rebuild it per se, but to keep this team on the keel that we've been on for 18, 19, 20 years, whatever it is. That to him is a personal challenge. It's not a challenge to show the world anything. It's not a challenge to prove his greatness. It's a challenge for him to do something that he looks at as difficult. The whole thing, the Bill Belichick ego, blah, blah, blah. You know what? He's only battling himself when it comes to all-time coaching greats. There's nobody in the conversation. Now I could easily see him saying, you know, hey, this is a challenge. This will be a unique challenge. I have to find Tom Brady's replacement, and I got to find a way to keep this ball rolling.
Now, do we look at Albert Breer as an insider or outsider in NFL?
I don't know, because I get confused, because Keith says Ian Rappaport's an NFL outsider.
We've kind of made that a show thing, but what do you think, Steve? You good with Breer?
It's fine.
At least Patriots.
That was a rousing endorsement.
He's comes up with some stuff here and there.
Well, this is what he had to say earlier this week on The Herd about exactly what you guys are talking about.
The feeling I've gotten is that there's even less certainty in the organization about Bill's future. Like, he could wind up coaching there for another 5 years. And that's part of the reason why you see Josh McDaniels looking at the idea of leaving. The other coaches, the other people in that building, now maybe Kraft knows, but other people in that building don't have a real idea now of how much longer Bill is going to be coaching, because he seems to be really enjoying it this year. He really likes his team.
Well, who said Josh McDaniels was looking at leaving? Who has said that?
Nobody, but there's speculation.
Albert Breer is now an outsider.
Well,
he was an insider a moment ago.
He just voted out.
We just voted him to. Who has speculated that Josh McDaniels is looking at getting out?
Everybody except Josh
McDaniels.
And but again, Josh isn't going to say that right now. Josh isn't going to sit there and say it. That's what we do sometimes. He's like, hey, you know, this is going to happen. Whether or not you have inside information. In this day and age, not that important. It's you're throwing something out there and you guise it in your opinion or whatever, but you back it up with certain scenarios that make your point. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about just saying this is going to happen. Tell me how, why, and when or what's going to happen.
617-779-7937. Sean's in Somerset. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Dale. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Love the new book. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks.
If Josh McDaniels were elevated to head coach of the New England Patriots, the Patriots would not be subject to the Rooney Rule because he's already employed by the team.
Is that true that you still don't have to consider minority candidates?
Only if you're hiring from the outside.
Well, and I don't know that to be true, but you sound very authoritative and you like my book, so I'm going to buy what you're saying.
Thanks, Dale.
See ya.
Dale's opinions can be bought now?
Oh, God, yeah. Buy my book. I'll agree with everything you say.
No, opinions are an acknowledgement of a different thought. That's all.
And I will look it up during the break. I was under the impression that, you know, any coaching hire in the NFL was subject to the Rooney Rule restrictions, but maybe I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He sounded like he knew what he was talking about.
Okay. He's reading from the book?
Said it authoritatively, so I bought it. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. It's Dale and Keefe. No Keefe today. Steve DeAssi's in the house. Sports Radio, WEEI.